wolf on the hill is never as hungry as the wolf climbing the hill.
Lone wolf is a term commonly used by many people. It means that they used to belong to a group, but left, to become stronger. By thinking and acting alone, the lone wolf acquires superior cunning, agility, imagination and skills unknown to members of the pack. The lone wolf is independent of and distances itself from the petty bickerings, expectations, demands, mediocrities and unfulfilled dreams of other people, groups or organizations. The lone wolf is often branded as the rebel,
for it is the sovereign lone wolf who stands alone in all of his or her glory. Listening to Lone Wolf Radio, presented and hosted by Tom Metzger. Tom is now broadcasting from a newly relocated and improved bunker in an undisclosed location with internet access across the globe. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode on Lone Wolf Radio.
And while you're listening, take your pen and your checkbook and write a donation to Lone Wolf Radio, Tom Metzger. Yeah. And then send it to Tom Metzger, P.O. Box 1687, San Jacinto, California, 92583. I had to start the show all over because I tried to play a recording from late last night, about 3 in the morning, that I recorded from a so-called futurist that was sort of predicting what was going to happen and based on his observations. The trouble was, he was consummate liberal, and you know how they think. They always think about good things. I'm okay, you're okay, but that's not the way things is run. Anyhow, that wasn't the reason I didn't play it for you, but it was the reason was that I had problems downloading it, and it was stopping and starting and so forth, so I had to forget that. But anyhow, the long and short of it is he's laying out this dire future and all the problems and everything else, but and he saw that as a horrible, horrible thing. But the problem is these kind of people base all their projections and theories based on their liberal mindset that the world was created for them, and not realizing the world wasn't created for any of us. Mother Nature runs the show, and if we screw up the environment like we have, you know, continuous wars and wars and wars and fratricidal wars, things get bad for us. Not necessarily that bad for the world, because this whole world's going to keep going no matter what we do. He was looking at everything as being if we just would adopt an I'm okay, you're okay attitude and love everything, things would be okay. But that's not the way nature operates. The natural forces of this world could give a shit less whether you're alive or well or dead. And what is attempting to be done, it looks like to me, is to restart evolution. We've been playing de-evolution now for quite a long time. And it's time to kickstart evolution again. And to do that, things got to become very violent, and all the things that go with that. Sort of like zombie nation. Only the problems are worse than the zombies. Believe me. When these animals out there get hungry, they're going to be far worse than zombies and far, far harder to stop. However, you could use a zombie nation type movie as sort of a template for what we're moving towards and what has to be done once we get to that point. But that's just for us, our own situation. Nature doesn't give a shit. Mother Nature doesn't give a shit. And all the people who keep trying to figure out how to solve problems usually are making more problems than they're solving. Now this guy on there said National Socialist Germany did not contribute anything and it didn't last but four or five years. And the Soviet Union the same. But that's wrong. National Socialist Germany contributed massive amounts of information that we're living by today. The science that National Socialism and the Soviet Union produced go on into the future, even though their regular structure collapsed. One due to old age, I guess, and the other due to being involved in a worldwide war. If there hadn't been a war, World War II, I would imagine that National Socialism would have gone on for a long time. But we don't know. But anyhow, when you hear all these guys talking about I'm okay, you're okay type evolution, don't pay any attention to them, because Mother Nature doesn't operate that way. She wants to have 50 earthquakes in one state. That's what she'll do. And it's good. Mother Nature's good. She may not be good to you and me, but she's good in the long run. And so, anyhow, I'll go on from there and see if I can upset you a little more. Oh, yeah, one other thing. See, people look at the social situation like it's some kind of a god and that everything's been put here for you and me. You know, Christianity spread that bullshit. It's all been preordained and put here for you and me, and that's the farthest from the truth. It's not true at all. And when you get into that kind of thinking, you're never going to really solve things. Okay, let's go on from there. So while other people get all upset about every little thing that goes along and every catastrophe, I don't get upset. I didn't cause it. I didn't really promote it that much. But it happens. So live with it. Sometimes watching news on TV, I'm smiling. Sometimes I'm even laughing because of the absurdity of the people in the news and what they're talking about and their solutions to problems, because they don't have any idea of a solution to a problem. because the problem's not going to be solved. Once it gets to a certain point, there is no solving it in a normal way. But Mother Nature is standing at the, on the side of the, behind the curtain, ready to solve it for us. Yeah. You may not like it, but she'll do it.
You are listening to Lone Wolf Radio, presented and hosted by Tom Metzger. Tom is now broadcasting from a newly relocated and improved bunker in an undisclosed location with internet access across the globe. So sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode on Lone Wolf Radio.
On December 5th on 48 Hours, there'll be a segment on my activity.
Okay. Focusing entirely on you or white supremacy in general? Or?
Well, entirely on us and skinheads.
Okay. Good, I'll make note of that.
Yes.
Thank you. Basically routine for you and I, but could you give us a little background on your history of involvement in white supremacy and where war is standing now and perhaps how it differs from other white supremacist groups?
Well, we do prefer the term white separatist because we're not necessarily promoting a simple supremacy position. We would like total and complete racial separation for the development of all the races. But anyhow, I've been involved for 25 years or more in various right-wing causes, and I became a Klan leader in 1975 until 1980 with David Duke. And in 1980, I left the Klan and developed the White American Political Association, which evolved into White Aryan Resistance. It's dedicated as an association of independent people to the idea that race is our number one important issue as far as the survival of Euro-Americans in North America, and that all other issues are secondary. We produce a television show ever since 1984 that's seen on public access TV around the country. We publish a 16-page tabloid newspaper. It goes out to several thousand people a month. We, of course, are quite active on the internet at www.resist.com. We receive about 150,000 contacts a week on our webpage, and so we're quite international in scope, and of course we do a lot of radio and TV. I ran for Congress in 1980, received 60,000 votes, ran for United States Senate in 1982 as an open racist and received 90,000 votes, and so that is... We have been guests of people in other countries. We've given seminars in Japan and other countries around the world. So that's a little bit of background on our activity.
Okay. Let me just see if there's any student questions right away.
Is your daughter going to school with blacks?
There are a few blacks in the school that are mainly children of military people because we're right next to the world's largest Marine base, Camp Pendleton, and the higher percentage, though, would be the Hispanic and Indian And ironically, most of the problems on the campus come between warring between the Indians and the Hispanics over for historical reasons. But it is a public school. They don't go to private school.
What does your daughter's belief on
white ancestry? Well, she loves her father. I've had six children, five daughters, one son. They're all independent thinking people, and I think that most of them, perhaps all of them, think pretty much along my lines, but however, I don't force them. Obviously, I would be very upset if there was a lot of interracial activity, social activity, so forth, between my daughters and non-white people, because I think many times that leads to more miscegenation, intermarriage, things like that. However, as far as interacting, being polite and courteous to people of other races, my children have never had any problem with that. They've always been straight-A students and done very well in school.
How do your beliefs differ from the beliefs of the Klan?
The Klan, of course, the original Klan, I would have more adherence to, because it was an unconventional army resisting a tyrannical Reconstruction period on the South, which was led by ex-military generals and so forth like that. The Klan of the 20s became more of a lodge-type organization, sort of mimicking the Masons, and brought a lot of ceremonial activity in that wasn't in the first Klan. The Klan, of course, is ostensibly Christian. I broke with Christianity in 1980, and we also broadened out our appeal to people, whether they're atheists or agnostics or racial Christians or what. And so there's quite a bit of difference there. War does not consider itself right wing, because we've had many positions that have been more to the left than to the right. We are in the forefront of being hypercritical of the transnational corporations, international banking. We have been in the forefront of any racial groups of, for instance, opposing the Cold War, that any kind of atomic warfare between North America and Russia would destroy the ancestral homelands of the entire white race. We oppose the intervention in Panama, Nicaragua, and places like that. And basically our position is that we should take care of our white racial problems here at home and not be policing the world. So the Klan has always tended to be have almost a one-issue situation, and that's just black people. And of course we feel at this time that that the mestizo invasion of North America is far outstripping any kind of a black problem we've had. And so there's a lot of other problems, such as an Asian invasion, 58,000 people a day coming into this country, and we've got a lot bigger problems than most of the Klan groups have been able to broaden themselves out to recognize.
Tom?
Yes.
From the 8th period, there was a number of students asking about some terms that you were using. One of them was the mestizo.
Yeah.
Fill in the background of that
term. Because it's unfortunate people use the terms like Mexican invasion, and of course Mexican is not a race. There are a lot of white people in Mexico that would be perfectly welcome, as far as I'm concerned, into this country. But the mestizo is the combination of the Indian and the Spaniard, which hangs to be much more Indian than Spaniard. The Zambo, which you don't hear very much in Latin America, or you don't hear much up here, is a combination of the Negro and the Spaniard. And so you have three types of people, the Zambo, the Mestizo, and then you have Euro-Mexicans, I guess you would call them, of white Spanish people and white Germans and all kinds of Europeans who have moved into Mexico and South America over the years. And, of course, some countries in South America, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and places like that have a large population of white people who also are working towards racial separation.
How did you get into the white supremacy group and stuff like that?
Well, I started out in 1964, before 1963, quite concerned with what was going on in the country. We had just gone through the Watts riots in Los Angeles. I lived just a few miles from when all the smoke was going up in the air and the neighborhoods were burning down and people were resorting to vigilante activity and all kinds of stuff. And so about that time kicked off my interest in what's going on in this country, that we better do something, we better do it fast. So I looked around for a political person to support. I ended up supporting Barry Goldwater in 64 as a Republican. Worked quite hard for his campaign, and then I went on and was introduced to the John Birch Society by a newspaper reporter I knew, and became involved with the John Birch Society for several years, becoming a leader in various areas of California of the John Birch Society. And then in 68, I supported the American Independent Party candidate for president, which at that time was George Wallace. And then in 72, I supported John Smith for president. And then I evolved into the tax rebellion when we had the Vietnam War, and we came out later in the war against it, and said that this is ridiculous, that you're just getting these people killed for nothing, and there's no end to this thing. And so I quit paying taxes, and government grabbed my house, and then they gave it back, and I've been fighting with the IRS ever since 71. And then I evolved into 75 to met David Duke and joined his Klan. We were doing a major revamp on how the Klan operated, and that's when we become quite political. And I ran for Congress during that period, and we also brought more attention to the problems on the border during that time. So, and then just kept evolving on up through self-education and mainly observation of what's going on around me.
Do you have a job other than the war?
Oh, yes. I could not support myself on war. I've always had a small business here. In the 60s, I worked for Douglas Aircraft in Santa Monica, California. I worked in their primary electronic standards laboratory, but I didn't like that closed-in punch clock situation. I went back into the television and electronic service business, which I'd been in ever since I'd been about 14, and I maintained a business here in Fallbrook ever since. And so I do a television, VCR, satellite equipment, and all that kind of service to maintain myself.
Do you have any employees?
No, I have in the past. I've had two or three stores with 9 or 10 employees, but due to my struggle with the IRS and so forth, I found that I could make more money by not having employees.
So when it comes time for someone of a different race to bring the TV into you, how do you treat that?
Well, everybody knows me around here. You just say Metzger in the whole county or Southern California, and they all say, oh, is that Tom Metzger? So anyone who would bring a TV to me or ask me to come to their home knows exactly who I am, and if it doesn't make any difference to me, then if they're black or what they are, I'll go out and do the best job I can for them, and I surely wouldn't cheat them because they're of another race. I believe in Aryans being honorable, and that means being honorable in their treatment of other races. Just because we want racial separation, it doesn't mean we go around all the time and with this big hatred thing in our eye, because I have associations business-wise quite a bit, and you can't get out of it here in Southern California with people of other races. But as long as they understand exactly where I'm coming from and I understand where they're coming from, we don't seem to have a problem.
Running for office is something considered doing again?
I'm very reticent to run for office again. My respect for the system has been nosediving for years, and not because I didn't win the first couple of times I ran, but I just have probably the worst opinion of politics that you could have. Every time I start running for politics, if people want you to always modify your views and water down your views, and I didn't like what that type of thing did to me. So I felt I'm much better on the outside pushing in than being on the inside. As many of the people of the 60s found out on the left, that they thought once they got inside the system they could really change things. Well, they found out pretty fast that the system's pretty tight and cohesive, and it's difficult to change it from the inside. It's easier to change it sometimes from the outside.
So if you were in office, Congress or Senate or whatever, what would your goals be?
Well, they told me right away when I ran for Congress and won the Democratic nomination for Congress, I lost the general election, they were going to move to keep me out of the Congress before I even had won the campaign. They said, well, even if this guy gets to Congress, we're going to kick him out of Congress. So I have no doubt that the system is so wired in that I don't think I would ever have been able to take my seat in Congress. And, of course, there were several assassination threats that came through from various groups like the Jewish Defense League and others. So I don't really think a person with really strong views like mine could get into a position of power in politics without some type of army behind him like the IRA. And Sinn Féin in Ireland is a perfect example of a very small party that has an army behind it that has quite a bit of clout.
Oh, you can't do it just to prove a point.
No, our primary issue is to change the minds of white people. Our problem is white people, not people of other colors. If we got people, white people's minds right, understanding that they are the minority in the world and they don't have to continually be feeling guilty about everything and apologizing for their ancestors that really carved out this country, took it and kept it for your benefit. Once we get white people thinking right, then everything else will fall into place, and the politicians will do the right thing, or they'll be drug out of office.
Tom?
Yes.
Basically, you got a room full of what I would consider white people.
Mm-hmm.
Want to continue with your sales pitch? What would you want them to think? What is your message? That was part of the original question.
Well, what I would like them to consider is the fact that for evolution to work properly, there has to be diverse races. And these races are evolving into what I would hope to be a higher state. The disappearance of the races into one sort of a UN brown man type situation will stymie evolution. Also, the observable fact that the white European race is a very, very small percentage of the world population, and always has been. Only through our aggressive nature, only through our creative abilities and in science and military and so forth, we've been able to hold our position in the world. Without those talents and those great talents of our forefathers, we would have disappeared long ago. And you must think of yourself as a minority, a very distinct and a minority that's getting smaller and smaller in the world, and then you have to ask yourself, well, does it make any difference whether the white race survives at all? Well, then I would say you must look to science and look at the encyclopedias and see who were the foremost creators of the great things of Western civilization that all people of all races really use. None of these people of the other races want to go back to what it was before they started using white inventions and white science. We are under attack as a race. It's a very nasty attack. It's It's clever. It's covert. You see it every day on the television. Hate Whitey. Hate Whitey. Whites are bad. Your ancestors were evil. And there's a whole program that you see every day drilled into your mind and many of your textbooks. It comes at you every day. And you have to get this sickness, this disease out of your brain and say, I'm a proud white person. And if other people can be proud and say exactly what they want and fight for what they want, then you should be able to say the same things without being called nasty names and rejected. That's what I would say to the people.
So when you say about North America becoming a third world banana republic,
that's what it's becoming right now, and it's becoming that way so fast that it make your head swim. I mean, you probably have experienced even in your own area, these mestizos are pouring in. I'm getting reports from all over the country where there's literally thousands and thousands of these mestizos from Latin America and so forth, and also Asians that are pouring in, and they're moving across the country. Now, I want to tell you, when they're in a more powerless position politically, they're sort of benign. They do get a lot of the jobs and so forth, and eat up a lot of resources. But when they begin to get power and get some demagogue in front of them, they're going to be really something to contend with. Now they're moving into the Republican Party, and they're already strong in the Democratic Party. And before you know it, all of a sudden, you're on the outside. And believe me, if you think that all these institutions that the white race has created are going to be maintained by a non-white population, that are going to be fighting each other, because the fighting will not stop. You think it's between whites and non-whites, it's even more between the non-whites. Here in California, in the prisons and all over the place, the mestizo Mexicans and so forth are warring against the blacks, and the blacks are warring against them, to where our streets are becoming sort of a Blade Runner society. So these people will not maintain your institutions. All this idea of Social Security and benefit for the seniors, all that stuff will go down the tube, because no nation has ever imported millions of people of other races and other cultures and maintained a greatness. And historically, you can check any country in the world that has tried, and it failed.
So it's more fighting amongst the mestizos, whatever you call them?
Well, for an example, the 18th Street Gang in Los Angeles is mestizo, and they've been moving into every city across the country, and they're armed to the teeth. These guys are criminal gangs, but they're also becoming more political. And what we're going to be looking at is many warlords developing around the country at the head of these groups. There's syndicates. You've got the triads from Asia moving in. You've got, of course, the black groups and primarily the black drug groups and so forth that are not only promoting and syndicating around the United States, they've even exported as far. I'm getting clippings from New Zealand and so forth, where the gangs are using computers and so forth to maintain communications and do business. But the white people are just sort of sitting there and saying, well, I don't know. They're waiting for their government to take care of it, and their government is not taking care of it. And for some reason, the people in the shadows behind the power in Washington seem to be wanting this to happen.
That 18th Street Gang, I think I remember reading, it has 20,000 members?
At least. And when you get 20,000 members, you're not a gang, you're an army. And these can be very easily converted into guerrilla operations in all these cities. In fact, you know, a lot of these people are really guerrilla operations rather than gangs. I think gangs sort of underestimates the power of these people.
So how many people do you have behind you?
Well, I think not nearly as many as I'd like to have behind me. I hope there's a lot more than maybe I think. Hopefully, the people who are with us are the ones who are in key positions that I've trained them to work their way into, that they each person would be far more important as time goes on. We have not concentrated like the Klan and the right wing on numbers. We have concentrated on quality, encouraging people of talent to become as educated as possible, no matter what they're into, and lay low, and operate like a submarine, cruise at periscope depth, work their way into the professions or wherever they can, and wait. And they know what they have to do when maybe the time comes. And we think that's far more important than trying just to recruit a whole bunch of people that maybe don't have that many talents.
Okay, just a second ago you were saying something like the white is just waiting around for the government or whatever to do something, and then you just now said that you wanted to wait. Could you explain that?
Well, in other words, I don't want people throwing themselves away in a struggle that they have no chance of winning. As long as the criminals in Washington are as strong as they are, there is no chance of any open confrontation, such as a militia thing, bumping heads with the government. But as this criminal government becomes more involved in trying to maintain law and order among these gangs and all this civil unrest, then the time will probably come when the whites such as me and our people may have a chance to combat these people who have, as far as we're concerned, they're criminals and change the government in some way.
You could say you're white Aryan resistance, the gang, and you the gang leader?
Well, I guess they could call me that, but the gang, normally gangs, the word gang is something of a criminal enterprise for profit, is usually for drugs or this and that, and almost all the gangs that I know of finance themselves by that kind of activity. We don't. Our associates all are working people. In various trades and so forth, the military, you name it, they're everywhere, and they're not into drugs, or they shouldn't be. Pardon me?
What's your average age?
It's a wide swath. Actually, I would say probably between 20 and 35, along in there. We have a lot of people younger than that, and we have a lot of people older than that. But you see, we're not a membership organization. None of our people carry cards. They're not encouraged to carry any kind of a card, any kind of identification, or wear any kind of a uniform. They're not encouraged to get tattoos that identify them and so forth.
So you're not very proud of your gang, or?
Pardon me?
So you're not very proud?
Well, I certainly don't feel gang. The term gang is a very nice thing to be called. I think the gang is in Washington, D.C. and Wall Street. I think those are the big gangs in this country. We have two gangs that run politics in this country. One is called the Republican Party, one's called the Democrat Party. And if there was ever anything that could be termed a gang, those are real gangs. Well, if we have racial separation in some form, we don't have to worry about equal rights. The whole idea of equal turns me off anyhow, because anyone who is familiar with the way society operates knows there's no such thing as equality. No one is born equal. I hear that stuff all the time. Some are born rich, some are born poor, some are born with talent, some are born without talent, some are born with disease, some are born healthy. So the whole idea of equality and universalism and world government, all that kind of utopian stuff is nonsense. Within our own race, obviously, we're not equal. I mean, there are brain surgeons and there's TV repairmen. I mean, you know, and so we're all unequal. But if you have total racial, physical, geographical separation, then each race can go to try to achieve its maximum goals. I continually tell black people, how can you ever achieve what you tell me you want to achieve if you're not in a nation of your own with your own government and your own police and your own science and so forth? As long as you're an integrated part of a white culture, you can never prove yourself. You may prove yourself as an individual, but not as a race.
So do you want to stop immigration?
Not only stop immigration, I want to deport millions of people as fast as possible, because when you have 58,000 a day coming into this country, and the majority of those people have the capability of averaging about three or four children in a family, your social structure will not support this. Your schools will not support this. In my area, the schools are turning mestizo so fast, and these people, a lot of them are not paying taxes at all. They're bringing diseases and lice and so forth and all kinds of things into the school. And I'll tell you another thing, there's going to be a big fight between the senior, older whites and these new invaders, because these older whites are not going to voluntarily support financially these schools. They won't vote for bond issues, because they're not their kids, are not of their people. And even though they would swear they're not racist, that's a fact. We see that happening over and over again. There's not enough teachers. There's not enough schoolrooms. I mean, when you open up your country and say, hey, you can all come in here and have everything we've got, why, of course they're going to come in here. I don't blame them. I mean, I'd be on the first car out of Mexico if I was in that situation. But you can't let it happen, because they're just going to sink the ship.
So what heritage are you?
Well, German, English, Swiss, primarily. My ancestors have been in this country, fought in the Revolution, fought in the Civil War, fought in World War I, World War II. We've been involved in just about everything that's happened in this country.
What was your idea of a perfect society?
A perfect society? Oh, there is no such thing, and I don't use words like that. The meaning of life is struggle. When there is no struggle, life becomes sedentary, you have blood clots in your system and so forth. It's like the human body. You must be struggling physically, working out, maintaining yourself all the time. A society has to be that same way. And there is no perfection, because we don't even know what perfection would be. And there certainly is no utopia, because that means nowhere. And so struggle is good, work is good, as long as you don't let it just overtake you totally. But forget about perfect societies. Even in an all-white state, there's not going to be nirvana. There's white people, are even all by themselves, are going to fight each other over different things, have different political parties, and a lot of the same problems we still have. But they would be among a homogeneous society.
So if you're hung up on white being the race for the best or whatever, if I gather it, why don't you like move to Antarctica, where there is no other race?
Well, personally, I don't like the climate. If the climate was better, I would have no problem moving someplace like that. Europe, unfortunately, has got the same problems we have here. They're pouring into Europe from Africa and all over the place. And it seems like most of the governments in Europe, of course, France is starting to change their position on immigration. Same problems over there. There is absolutely not one all-white nation left in the world to where you could go and say, this is a white nation, you can come here to visit for a few weeks, but then you're going to go home, we can have trade, we can have this and that, but this is an all-white nation. There is absolutely no place like that. Now, there are places where there are pockets where there is almost all-white people, but it's almost an accident, because the minute anything looks like there's something good there, non-white people say, woo, we want that. I mean, everywhere whitey goes, non-white people follow them. And they follow them because white people produce a civilization that in most cases is superior. And they like it. And they want part of it. But the problem is, when they climb on board by the millions, they destroy, they get the baby, they throw the baby out with the bathwater.
You're a big electronic person, right?
Pardon me?
I said you're big into electronics at all?
Well, I've been in electronics all my life.
Okay, so what do you think about the inventions of the Japanese electronics?
I think that's good, and I have a lot of respect for the Japanese. In fact, it's one of the most homogeneous groups of people in the world, and I've been a guest of Japanese businessmen and military people and so forth in the past, and the reason for their greatness is their homogeneity, and that they operate in family situations and like that. However, there's nothing the Japanese have done that hasn't been first started in this country. The videotape machine was developed here. All these things were developed here. And because someone was short-sighted enough not to see that this would be a really good thing to push, it moved to Japan, and you'll find that the Japanese and other nations are always picking up ideas that we're starting, and like the rockets with Goddard, who developed the rockets here. Pardon me?
What about video games?
Well, you see, a racist by the name of Shockley, who was a professor at Stanford University in California, who wrote books on the differences between the races, invented the transistor. And without the invention of the transistor, none of this would be possible. And so you'll find, if you go back far enough, on almost every major basic foundation invention, it does lead back to white people. Not in every case, and I'm not taking away the talents of other people. And like I say, I respect the Japanese, but they're more copiers than innovators. It's just that America has adopted a system that has turned off really free enterprise in just about every area, whether it's medicine or whether it's electronics or what. We discourage new development in this country, and the corporations go to other countries and develop this stuff so they can make a lot of money, and so the rich are becoming richer, the poor are becoming poorer, and we're headed for big trouble in this country.
So just because we invented, or that a white person invented the transistor, does that mean that he has the brain power to produce a video game with it?
Of course, not necessarily that person, because it works in stages, but you'll find electronics that one person developed this, one person developed that, and then they put it together and developed this. I think the Japanese have been excellent in pouring over the developments of people in this country and then putting them together into something that works quite well.
We're coming to the end of the period, and they're giving us some announcements right now.
Yes.
Maybe we can cut through that if it's okay with you.
Sure.
And then students will be excused here, but we got a little break, so maybe some will hang out.
All right.
Some will leave, so we'll interfere with it.
Okay.
Let me see if I get any
questions. Well, one thing, the comment I would make, and I have no problem answering questions like this, it's always amazing how white people always jump to the defense of other races and other cultures and don't seem to realize that it's nothing wrong with seeing the developments of other races and saying that as good, but what is this mentality that we immediately jump to the fact that and try to infer that we're inferior? And this is our big problem in this country, of white people not saying, hey, man, we got the greatest thing going, and we're going to make it even greater, and we're going to build our even better society and better cars and better everything else. And we're in sort of this downer-type attitude that building on white inferiority of some type, and it doesn't make sense. You don't see that in the animal world.
My general observation, being in education, talking with numbers of people, including students, a lot of people have the viewpoint that, you know, you talk about different races, but I think the general approach is that we're a human race.
Well, that's one of the outcomes of social anthropology, and they keep refining their words, like miscegenation and race mixing. Now they call ethnic democracy. So the human race, of course, is PC. It's such a big, blurry type of a concept that it really doesn't mean anything, because people who say they care all about the whole human race, I don't believe them, because I think that maybe they want to believe that. Most people care about themselves, they care about their families, and they care about their extended families, and maybe their county, and maybe their state. Beyond that, their concern about what happens a thousand miles away is very limited. They may express horror about things that happen around the world, but it doesn't really affect their daily life. I think we're a bunch of hypocrites in this country, and I think even our PC terminology shows that.
Do you think by nature we are all racist to a degree, that if I'm a white person, and I come across a person with darker skin, do I automatically have some concern or red flags come up?
Well, I would recommend Robert Audrey's books, Territorial Imperative and the Evolution of Social Contract, since my opinion is we are animals, we are higher animals, but we are still animals, that the skin color is just a flag that goes up. It's sort of like the monkey's going down the trail in the jungle and he sees a lion. Well, he don't have to stand there for 5 minutes saying, I wonder if the lion's friendly, I wonder if the lion's this, I wonder if the lion's bad. He has his experience in his mind that goes back for generations that says, when I see a lion, I better beat it out of there. And it just takes him a split second to run. And I think we have evolved that way, and we are tribalistic in nature, basically. And there are certain markers that cause us to say, whoops, stranger. I mean, even among white people, somebody drifts into town and maybe he's a street person or something, and you know immediately you spot him going down the street and your flag goes up, and that's the way we have evolved. Yeah, but it's not the skin color itself, because if that was all it was, there'd be nothing even to fight about. But there are racial traits far beyond skin color, and physical traits, disease traits, creative traits, and all that we're talking about.
I was wondering about your wife's thoughts about what she did, or is she
like
active in your group?
Well, my wife of 25 years passed away about 5 years ago of cancer, so I'm not married at this time. I live with my two daughters. We have a home here, and 13 and 16, and so I'm a single mom. So I keep pretty busy here between taking kids to schools and all the activities they have and all that kind of stuff, plus politics, plus doing electronics work. But she was totally in support, possibly even more earnest about than I. She was always extremely supportive.
Now, do your daughters get harassed or anything because what their father stands up for?
Not any more than I do on the local level. You see, I live in this town. There's a lot of non-whites here. I talk to them every day. And it's attitude. You can be a real strong racist if you carry yourself as a proud person and you treat people with respect and politeness. They generally do that back to you, even when they know who you are. And so I don't have these problems, and my kids have never had these problems.
So if your daughter, come home someday with a person of darker skin, how would you treat that? Let's say this guy wanted to take your daughter out on a date.
Well, then there would be a problem, because here is one of the foremost sins, as far as we're concerned, even though we're not religious in that sense, that a dating of a person of another race is out. Well, I mean, they do have these sort of quasi-friendships at school where they talk and do studies together, things like that, and I have no problem with that. It's just when it goes beyond that is what I discourage, and I've always discouraged that. And I think since I've been pretty much out in the open about it with people of other races, in fact, I think white people get the misconception that every person of color is just chomping at the bit to go out with someone white, and really that's not true. You'll find among even mestizos and blacks and so forth, certainly a number of parents who feel the same way I do. They want their kids to go out with people of their own race and marry people of their own race and like that. And I talk to black people all the time that feel strongly that way, but they don't. You don't hardly ever hear that. The impression given by white liberals is that every person of color is just can't wait to go out with a white person.
Well, don't you think it's your daughter's decision who she wants to date? I mean, if she decides she wants to date someone black, isn't that her right?
Well, obviously, in a family situation, until the time that people are legally responsible, it's not a democracy. It's sort of an authoritarian situation. Now, some authoritarian situations are easier to get along with than others, and I'm quite liberal, actually, with my kids. But the decision of who a teenager or a person who's not of legal age is going to go out with, as long as they're in my home and putting their feet under my table, will be my decision. And at some point, when they become independent, they can make their own decisions along those lines. I would say this, I don't want to mince words on it, any child of mine who would marry a non-white person is, it doesn't any longer, is not my child. And I do not want any half-breed, mixed-race grandchildren. And I've got about eight grandchildren now, and they're all white, and I want to keep it that way. That's you see, some people have Christian religion, some people have Judaism, some people have Islam. I have my race, and that is my religion, and I want to keep it as straight as I can.
So, earlier in this talk, you said something like you don't force your daughter to do anything about someone asked if she was active in your group, and you said yes because of her choice. Where do you draw the line under authority between, let's say, group leader, or race leader, sorry, and father? I mean, like, you just said that, you know, it's like a dictatorship in your house when it comes time for like dating and stuff. But yet when it comes time for war, it's her choice.
Well, it's that all houses are sort of dictatorships, or at least a benevolent monarchy. If they're not, they've got anarchy, and we know what happens in a lot of homes because they have anarchy, usually leading to all kinds of problems, including drugs. No, I mean, as far as the people that my daughters have, among white people who have said they make their choice among white people, I may counsel them if I see something that I don't think looks too good. But where I draw the line is at the racial color line. And that, let me give you my email address. It's Metzger.
And that was an appearance at a Minnesota high school that I used to every year get a call from a teacher there, a very brave teacher, that had the guts to call me, and I would address two or three of his classes, and about once a year we'd do that. And but I think they finally got to him. Either he retired or they drug him down, because I haven't heard from him in a long time. And that's it for today. This is Terrible Tommy, and I'm out of here.
Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?